The Lessons Learned for Vets podcast is proud to be brought to you by AFMA, the American Armed Forces Mutual Aid Association. Established in 1879, they are the longest standing nonprofit association empowering military families with affordable financial solutions for generations, offering life insurance, wealth management, mortgages, survivor assistance, and other benefits. AFMA is here to support you through every stage of life. AFMA is dedicated to helping service members be financially and logistically ready for life after the military. To support you in this process, AFMA would like to offer you their free downloadable transition timeline, a step-by-step guide to help you create a comprehensive military transition plan. Let AFMA help you get ready for your next step by visiting AFMA.com/LL4V, that's AAFMAA.com/LL4V, or clicking the link in the show notes. Welcome to the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast, your military transition debrief from the veteran mentors who've gone before you. My name is Lori Norris, and I've been teaching veterans how to successfully navigate their military transition since 2005. I'm a civilian who speaks the language of all branches of the U.S. military, and I'm on a mission to educate veterans in the job search marketing process. This podcast shares the military transition hot washes and after-action reports of your fellow veterans to smooth your own path out of the military. Well, welcome back to part two with Mary Polenko, the author of Your Final Debrief. And when I spoke with Mary last season and she told me she was writing a book, I already knew it was going to be amazing because she had so much great information to share. And I knew that we were going to have her back. But when I started reading the book, I started going through it. I literally have like 20 post-it notes on this book of questions I wanted to ask. So I had to narrow it down, but I'm excited that you agreed to join me for two episodes. Thanks for coming back, Mary.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here again.
So as we ended last week, we were talking about kind of likening your service to a marriage and your separation or retirement to a divorce and just the kind of the grief and the five stages of grief that might come along with that process. And so if someone listening is kind of finding themselves experiencing this type of grief, and by the way, grief doesn't have a timeline, right? Like sometimes it's a very long process. Sometimes you experience grief years and years after. And so you may be already separated, retired for multiple years and going through it. So what are your suggestions to people who may be experiencing one or all of these five stages at the same time? What can they do to get through it?
Yeah, I think the one thing that comes to mind right off the bat is question your feeling. When something comes up, ask, where is this coming from? What does this mean? Where is it originating? Like, there's so much information in just pausing and saying, why am I feeling this way? I've been out of the service for 3 years, and I get so angry when I see a post by a specific somebody, right, that's military related. Like, what? Question those things. Why am I feeling that way? That portion of it is really going to allow you to get the answers that you need to move forward through to accepting what your service was and where you're at now. And so that's really like sort of an overarching piece of advice, is always question where maybe that's coming from.
Okay. And I think like the why behind it could be many different things, right? Maybe you've been out for 5 years and all of a sudden your job that you've been in and been happy in, maybe it's not working for you anymore. And that's okay. Like, now, again, you're a civilian now. You can make changes. You can pivot. You can go a different direction. And so finding out the root of what's going on is really important so you can figure out what to do about it next, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, and like you said, it could be have nothing to do with necessarily your military transition. But just at any point in your life, we've transitioned so many different ways, mm-hmm, throughout our lives, relationships and jobs and et cetera. So I feel like that's an important thing to be doing constantly, is the reflection on where you're at, where you've been, and where you'd like to see yourself go, for sure. And with that reflection comes a lot of feelings. And if I can be so bold to say, I think that's why a lot of people suppress feelings, because dealing with them makes you feel certain things. And we're not always feeling prepared to feel those certain things. I know I wasn't in my career. I wasn't prepared to have the conversation with myself that my values were changing. I bled blue, as they say in the Air Force, yep. You know, so that was one of those things I suppressed. But once I started to bring it up to the surface, I found so much clarity.
What could happen to a person who is suppressing their feelings?
Certainly, I know we've learned this growing up. It bubbles, it boils, and then you've got to come out some way, right? So it's so unhealthy to hold in all of that. And what's really makes this tricky is we oftentimes are moving about having no idea what layer underneath has to be exposed. We don't even know what we don't know. I know for me, that's exactly what happened. So I had no idea that I had these thoughts and feelings about my time in the service. I think I know I shared this in the book, but something that through therapy when I started, something that had bothered me to the core when I was 19 years old as a security forces member came out 18 years later. I had no idea that that was holding on to me the way that it had been for so many years.
Yeah.
And so that's another reason why I'm such an advocate for therapy and reading and journaling and meditation and all of those things, because you can kind of create the space for things to come up for you to address them so you can move forward.
Yep. And I think you really, it's very hard to move forward in an effective way without dealing with those things, right? So I was just, when you were talking, it reminded me long ago when my daughter was in grade school, she was graduated from college now. So she took chicken noodle soup in a thermos to school and left it. And they had Fridays off. And so Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it had been left sitting on the counter, just like ruminating there. And it literally blew the lid off of the thermos, hit the ceiling, and I had like, 10-foot ceilings, and put like chicken noodle soup on the roof. And think about, what's your chicken noodle soup?
Yep. Great analogy.
What is your like rotten, rancid chicken noodle soup inside of you that needs to come out? And how is it going to come out? Is it going to come out in a healthy, productive way that makes everybody around you happy? Probably not, if it's coming out like my chicken noodle soup, right?
Yeah.
So let's get to it before it festers and explodes out of you, right?
So, such a good analogy. Yes. Yeah. Physical manifestation of yucky chicken noodle soup.
Here's my question to you. What is your chicken noodle soup that needs to be fixed?
That's right.
Let's clean that thermos before it causes a mess on your ceiling. Because that was not fun to clean up, let me tell you.
Yeah.
So you, some people get forced out of the military. They get med boarded. They get higher tenure. Whatever happens, like they have a life situation that causes them to no longer be able to serve. You chose to retire. You were excited to retire. You actually decided to go even before it was time, right? Like you didn't have to go. You weren't at higher tenure. But the actual day came, and you talk about it in your book, the actual day came and it really hit you hard, didn't it?
Yes. Oh man, was I cocky. I was like, there's no way. Like I'm so ready. I did this whole transition thing because like I had said, I had hit acceptance like a year before I even retired. And that last year, I did everything I recommend to everybody, and that is scale back as much as possible. Do your job. Take care of yourself and your team, and do your job. But that's it. Don't do anything extra. So I totally did that. And then I was on terminal leave for almost 4 months. And when that day, it was like, the clock turns to the new year. When that day turned, that next day, I was like, what the heck? What? Wait, I don't, what's going on? What? Why am I feeling this way? And of course, because now I'm reflective all the time, the reason why I was so shocked, which is why I want to help folks be prepared for that, is because it was like nothing I had ever done in my career ever. When you PCS, when you change stations, you go to a new base, there's somebody there to either be your sponsor or to check in with, to tell you what to do, point you to the place. When you retire or separate, that day happens, it's real. There is no entourage. There is nobody coming to say, welcome, glad you're here. Not nobody. And so it was a shock for me because I thought, wow, I am really on my own with this, right? Like truly, this is a full autonomous life at this point. And that was something I had never even, I couldn't even picture it. I couldn't even picture it. It wasn't until the day it happened where I was like, whoa.
So again, I think it's just a matter of like, be ready. Like you might in your mind, like say, okay, this is what I want. And then, you know, that saying like, be careful what you wish for because you just might get it, right? And then it happens and it's a little bit of a shock. And I think that we can be both, right? We can be ready to be wrap up our career in the military and be sad that it's gone. And that's okay, right? Just know that that might hit you. And yeah, I like how you talk about it in the book.
Thanks. Yeah, it might. There might be people It doesn't affect at all. It was that when I made the connection of what's different about this time than any previous time I've moved or, you know, transitioned to another place or job. And that was the biggest difference was literally nobody. There was nobody calling me. There was nobody, you know, and that I could feel real isolating and it could feel real lonely. And that is, it's not bad necessarily, but it is something to acknowledge of also the great side of that. There's nobody telling you what to do.
Yeah.
Celebrate that. That's a great thing.
I mean, we want the military to roll on without you. Like heaven forbid, the security of our country rests on Mary's shoulders. And if Mary doesn't do her job, it's over. I don't think we want that one person to be responsible for the military continuing on.
No.
And so it's okay. Like that doesn't mean that they don't care about you. That doesn't mean that you didn't have a great career, that you made amazing contributions, but they have to move on without you.
Yes.
They have to because they have a job to do.
If that's such a sure thing, if that's a fact, which we know it is because how many millions of people have left? If that's such a fact, it's all the more reason for those of you listening that are still wearing the uniform to start prioritizing yourself. Like that is, because if everyone did that, if everyone really developed themselves and found fulfillment in what they were doing and took time for the things they love, they would show up different at work. They would be more motivated. We would have a better force, a healthier force. And so that's sort of my plug right there for those of you that, you know, separation is not on the horizon. Start taking care of yourself. It's okay. You should do that. You'll wonder why you didn't.
Promise it is going to be better if you do. So, okay. So if anyone has read Herb Thompson's book, Transition Mission, he talks about the people that kind of travel around with like their battalion number on their back window and they wear the veteran hat and their everything about them is veteran. Those people have a little bit of a harder time adapting in the private sector than the ones that say like, I'm a veteran, I'm a Marine, I'm a soldier, I'm an airman, I'm a sailor, I'm a Coast Guard member, I'm a guardsman, a guardian, sorry. You know, whatever it is that you identify with, and I'm me, right? So you can be both yourself and a veteran and a service member. He says the more you're able to do that, the more successful and smooth your transition is likely to be, right? And you talk about it in your book as well. So the importance of separating your identity from the military. And
yes.
I think it's really important. And you can be your own person and a very successful service member. Would you agree with that?
100%, I agree.
Okay. So how do you recommend that people listening start to separate those two, kind of who they are with their service.
Well, pull out a piece of paper and write down the question, who am I? Because I can promise a lot of you are probably going to be met with a little bit of anxiety looking at that question. Who am I? How do I answer this question? Because in order for you to separate your identity, you got to have an identity to fall back on, and that's you. And it's not a fallback. But for a long time, serving the military, it has been. It's been on the back burner. You know, when I do a seminar for transitioning members, the very first slide I put up is me entering the service, like basic training, and me as a chief. And then I has a list of all my jobs that I held. And I get through it. I do the little introduction. And I'm like, you know, this is what we normally hear people say who they are. This is what we do. This is the job I held, et cetera. I said, but this is not me. This is not me. You get nothing about me from this list. And then I put up a different picture with which shows I'm multifaceted. You know, my the business I own, the business that failed, the being a mother, a wife, a card maker, a YouTuber, like all of these things, because I identify as really, if you asked me to do that, like, Mary, what would you say? What do you do? I would say a teacher. I feel like that's the one thing that does resonate with me as a part of my true identity is I'm a teacher. But everyone out there is multifaceted. You just have to take the time to start figuring out what those pictures look like for you as a, you know, as a side to you serving in the military, you know? And so I think your question was, how do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
You have to start asking those questions of yourself. What do you like to do? Well, if you don't know what you like to do because work has been your mission for the last 4 to 30 years, that's okay. I mean, like, it's okay to say, I don't know, right? Like, most asked question, what are you going to do when you get out? And most common answer, I'm not sure. Or, I don't know what my passion is. I don't know what my purpose is. I'm not sure yet. And that's okay. But you have to start dedicating time. There's the tangible. You have to start dedicating time to the discovery process to find out what has been dormant for so long. If you've been able to really have a personal identity while you've been serving, kudos to you. We should be taking notes from you, and shame on us for ever making you feel any less than for that.
No.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I would tell you that chapter 9 is probably one of the most valuable chapters in your book. They're all great, but chapter 9 really digs into getting in touch with kind of who you are, right? So you're going to have to go buy the book to get them all. But I want to highlight just 3 of the 9 questions that Mary tells you to ask yourself in this book. And I think you already said, like, who am I, right? So that, but I don't even think that's one of your 9 questions. That's kind of a, these are like sub questions under that one. Because I think that there are some really tough questions that you have to ask yourself. And there's no one right answer to any of them because it's yours, right? You don't have to share this with anybody. But let's go through like 3 of them that really I thought were great. The first one I want to talk about is, what brings you peace? Tell me why that one's important.
Well, it's my hope that when you're designing the life you've always wanted or didn't know you even wanted, that a part of that is you're filled with a sense of fulfillment and peace and joy doing what you do. And I think a lot of us have maybe been given this answer because society tells us what should bring us peace. For example, I'll be honest, you know, when I was grappling with just juggling everything, I assumed I must spend quality time with my children. That is something that should make me feel very peaceful and happy to be there. And it was quite the opposite. That's not what brings me peace. But I was convincing myself that it was. And so by really trying to dive into what is this thing that calms your heart, that makes you feel like you can be still, that you can just connect, what is that thing for you? Because you're going to want to put a lot more of that into your life. You know, something I know we've probably, most of us have heard this, but I always go back to it, and it's, we're human beings, not human doings. And so sometimes it's okay to just be? And what's that thing when you're being that's allowing you to be peaceful? Because I'm going to tell you a little secret. There is a lot of clarity. There are a lot of answers in the stillness, but you just got to try it. So what's that thing? And I think that's why it's so important that you understand that.
I just choose not to slow down so that I don't have to hear those answers. Maybe I don't like them, right? No.
You're not going to.
No, I'm kidding, obviously, but I think it's, you're right. And I think like sometimes we think, well, we can't be alone or we can't take time to ourselves or we should do all of these things that, or not do all the things that make us feel like we're being selfish, right? There's that word again. And I think that you have to take care of yourself so that you have something to give to others, you know, as a mom, right? You know, it's like I gasped, right? Hanging out with your children doesn't give you peace. Well, heck no, they're 13 and, you know, whatever. They're sassy teenagers.
Yes.
And so I need to go find my peace so that I can come back and be that for them. And I can give them the best of me. If I don't take care of myself, how am I going to take care of them and help them, you know? So that's a great one. So
I'm glad you made that distinction, because just because I don't feel peace when I'm with my children doesn't mean I don't feel joy. It doesn't mean I don't feel a sense of wonderment, because I do. Now, because I've found peace, I'm able to view our interactions differently. I'm able to be more present, engaged, that kind of thing. So yeah, I'm glad you made that distinction, because they're different. They're different things.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's almost like that opportunity to just kind of breathe and just, like you said, just be there and just kind of be silent and feel that kind of connection to whatever you're looking for. And that's really important. So I really like the second one. You know, it's the second question I want to ask, and that is, what would you do with your time if you had no worries?
So a caution to the folks who are just getting out. I say caution because I totally expect your first answer to be like, nothing. I want to just relax and lay down and binge watch Netflix. Like, I just want to, and I get that. And so I did it, and I recommend it highly, and I tell you in the book. But when the dust settles and you're living the life that you are designing for yourself, what could that look like? What would you do with your time? And the reason this is so important is because we have been told and conditioned and taught through our adult careers, through our career life, that you have to have a plan and it has to be realistic, right? But the problem with that is, by whose standards? You know, when I was writing my vision for my life, I said very clearly as I was writing it, I wanted to work no more than 4 hours in front of a computer a day. And as I was writing it, the chief master sergeant, active duty person was like, you're crazy. Like, how are you going to make enough money to do it by working 4 hours? There was all of these limiting factors, right, that I thought I had. And so when I say, what would you do with your time if you had no worries, I want you to eliminate any naysaying in your brain. If you could do this thing and not worry about money, not worry about having enough time, just because you love it, what is that thing? Because you can find a pathway to that thing, but you got to know what it is first.
You know, have you ever sat and thought about, like, what would I do if I won the lottery?
Yes, always.
Right? I think that's a great you know, like, as we say, you can't win if you don't play. But, you know, that's another story for another day. But what would you still do what you're doing currently? Would you still work in the same type of a role? Would you still live your life the same way? Right. And so those are some questions. Like, if literally you took money off of the table, what would you do? And I sometimes wonder that about people that have kind of like limitless money. How do they fill their days? You know?
Well, I would love to tell you one day. That's the goal. But I got a chill when you were asking those questions, because the stuff I'm doing right now, as you're saying, well, if you had all this money, would you still do it? Yes. Like, yes, I would still do that. I'd still do that. Oh my goodness. And that made me really feel good about my decision. So, but yeah, that's exactly right. Like, what's that thing? And I know, okay, let's just take a kind of a pause out and look at the next generation coming up. My son, who's 10, he's watching this guy on YouTube, and my son is just a master builder for Lego. And he's watching this guy, multiple YouTubers on there that are sharing their love of Lego with the camera and with the audience. And they are full grown men, like 35, 40 years old, has a basement full of Lego. Like, they are just loving what they're doing. Now, that's not the newest generation, but I feel like there's so much opportunity now for us to answer this question for ourselves and find a pathway to it. You know, what is that thing that's lighting you up that you can, you can find a pathway to it. But you have to acknowledge what that is and stop with the limiting beliefs surrounding it. I love that.
Absolutely. That kind of leads us into like the last question I want to throw out there of your three of your nine questions you ask. And that is, what is your legacy?
Ah, gosh, this one I thought about not putting it in the book in this way, because I've actually talked about this one time and I had someone who was locked into the definition of legacy in societal definition, which is famous, you know, changed the world, quote unquote, a scientist, like what that legacy behind. And that is not at all what I'm talking about. I'm talking about at your funeral, what will people say about you and how you lived your life and how you showed up in your life? Yeah. That's the legacy. And something I think we don't acknowledge or give enough credit to is the ripple effect of your the way you are and the way you show up. That is your legacy. So whether it's good or bad, like, that's a choice you have to make.
Mm-hmm.
We don't give enough thought to, hey, you know, I was at the store yesterday and I saw someone that dropped a bag and groceries went everywhere, and I stopped and I picked them up and I smiled at them and I helped. That's a ripple. That is a ripple that then that person will continue on their day having felt at least good for 5 minutes, right?
Yeah.
So we need to acknowledge that and how you want to show up in the world. That's your legacy. What does that look like for you? And I had done this exercise. I've done the exercise where I wrote out an obituary, and it was how I lived how I want people to remember me. None of it. There was nothing in there that said made it to the highest ranks of enlisted. Like, that was not on there at all, right?
Yeah.
It was, you know, for me, it's hopeful. I'm hopeful that people feel like I made them feel welcome and comfortable and included, and that I tried my best to leave something better than I found it. You know, like, what is your legacy? What do you want to do? Because that's going to be your anchor as you move forward through your transition, because you can look back and say, am I in alignment with this legacy, with how I want to live my life? So it's hugely important.
I think of it as like, what do you want to be known for and then remembered for? Like you said, what would they put in your obituary? What would they put on your headstone, right? So I think that it doesn't mean you have to be well known and famous. My kids joke with me that I'm LinkedIn famous. I'm like, I don't really think I am anymore because I haven't been on there very much. But like the fact I have an IMDb page, like, you know, because I'm a podcast host, which blows my daughter's mind. I'm like, dude, there's nothing on there. It just has my name and host. But just say that, you know, and that's I think is about as famous as I'm ever going to get. But I think I know what I'll be remembered for when I'm gone. And I think that's all I want you to think about is, what will people remember you for? Will they remember you for being short-tempered and grumpy? Will they remember you for making an impact on, you know, three people's lives deeply? Like, what is it? What do you want to be known for? And I think that's a really important question. And then to go off and live in toward that goal, because we never know.
Yes.
We never know what's going to happen. So. Love it.
And let's remember, most people are not famous. Let's just put that plug in there.
And I don't want to be famous. Oh my gosh. No. I can't even imagine. Like, I, you know, we were talking about this the other day. The fact that there is a website dedicated to telling you where Taylor Swift is flying or like living, breathing at any given moment. Like, I can't even imagine it. Who wants to be there? So But I think, you know, like I said, my kids like jokingly call me LinkedIn famous. Like nobody on Instagram knows me. Nobody, you know, anywhere else knows me. It's just that, and not everyone on LinkedIn knows me. A small group of people do.
Yeah.
And that's okay with me. So
your sphere of impact. Yeah.
So, all right. So as we wrap up this two-part episode, you're like, I am done talking to you, Lori. But let's kind of close out with some final thoughts you want to leave with anybody listening that they can learn from your book.
So I really want people to start making the commitment and the choice to invest in themselves. It's interesting because, you know, you can have I have a whole queue of books I want to read. Where it happens that you have a lot of this information can get in and it can make you start thinking differently. But I do believe there has to be action behind it for you to pivot in the direction you've always wanted. And I really want you to consider some of the portions of the book for you to do that, to be encouraged to do that. It doesn't have to be done in a day or a week or a year. It's just an opportunity for you to pivot the angle just a little bit so you can start moving toward a very fulfilling life. Because you said at the beginning of last episode, which was you deserve. And I fully believe that you deserve, everyone does deserve to live the life that they were meant for, the life that inspires them every single day. Because when you show up inspired, you inspire other people. And then all goodness happens. So I really want you to just take the time for yourself to figure out what that looks like. And then dive in. Don't be afraid. Do it. You're fully capable of doing anything that you want to do. And just believe that.
Absolutely. I couldn't say it any better. I'm going to put a link to your website, which is where people can go to either purchase the book directly from you or even from Amazon if they want to do it, download it through Kindle. Is there a Kindle available?
Kindle is available. Yep. Yes.
Okay.
Audiobooks
okay.
In the works.
Okay. And so I'll give you the website. And it is, it will be in the show notes, but if you go to, and also I'll give you Mary's LinkedIn URL so you can connect with her. And I know she talks about where you can get it there. But if you also go to her website, which is liveandleadwell.org, you will find a link to find that book there. So, Mary, thank you for coming back, for being one of my esteemed repeat guests. I very much appreciate you sharing your story, but also like this great book that you've written. And I highly recommend everyone go out and buy it and read it because it is very impactful.
Oh, thank you so much, Lori. And I cannot leave here without thanking you for everything you're doing for all of us. The veteran community is so blessed to have you and that you made us a part of your legacy. So thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast. If you learned just one lesson today that you believe can help you in your military transition, then I've done my job. Please don't keep this podcast a secret. Share it with as many of your active duty service member friends and transitioning veterans who may be struggling with that process as possible. Please subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review, and join our YouTube channel so you don't miss any lessons that we share.